Now Kerr, looking for the lob. Oh, that's brilliant. And Sam Kerr has surely clinched the title now. World-class players do world-class things.
Welcome to another episode of Fran Kirby's Fight Club. This is Andre Carlisle, of course, and I'm here with Miriam, of course. And we are also here because this is a crossover pod. But first, Miriam, how are you doing?
I'm really excited for you know, the obvious reason, the secret reason, the people who are going to introduce themselves in a bit. But yes, this is our first crossover pod, and it is pretty amazing and quite fun to see some new faces because, you know, it's just like you and me every week. We don't even see each other's faces, actually. We don't even like do a thing. So this is quite a lot happening all at once. So yeah, excited.
It is a lot happening all at once. And we have the podcast N17 Women are here with us, the Spurs podcast, here to talk about the Chelsea's game with Spurs coming up on November 20th. So I'm going to let N17 Women, if I could talk, introduce themselves and welcome.
Hi there. My name's Rachel. I'm part of N17 Women and I write Spurs Women blog.
I'm Caroline and I write a newsletter called Spurs Across the Pond.
I'm Sean, and I am a member of the Proud Lily Whites, and long-time Spurs women fan. I was at Stamford Bridge the last time we played there.
And I'm Abby, and I write about Spurs women for Cartilage Free Captain. Yeah, that's about it. Really excited to be here.
Oh, shout out to Cartilage Free Captain. Some of my good longtime friends have written for that blog. So yeah, shout out to that. And also, Sean, sorry about Bethany England in that first meeting. Apologies.
To be honest with you, losing 1-0 in our first ever WSL game against Chelsea didn't feel too bad. particularly not when it's a, you know, one of those just you're not going to stop it goals.
Right. Yeah. That was an absolute ridiculous hit. And it was weird because it felt like the rest of the game was going to get a little scary in terms of the goal, like maybe the score line. But, you know, Spurs played well and then Chelsea decided to never score again. But we are going to get into some questions with them. We want to talk a bit about Spurs. I kind of want to start high level and then we'll drill down and focus on the game. But I've been sort of fascinated by the growth of women's soccer, of course, in the UK with a lot of the, especially the big clubs over there. You know, we know Chelsea and Arsenal have been big. We know Manchester United just decided to join the party in, 2018. But Spurs have been there and there have been some kind of, I don't know, it's been a little interesting over the years, over a few seasons. So I guess we know there was a lot written and discussed about the clubs, you know, commitment or maybe lack of commitment through the season. So, and it seems like things have turned around a bit. Is that your sense? And if so, what do you kind of attribute to that turnaround?
Well, I think Spurs have done it in that kind of, in a proper way, as I like to see it. We've built our way up from a grassroots level to where we are now. We've never jumped leagues. We've never had a huge, massive investment and therefore suddenly got a lot better. We've done it in a progressive way. Under Karen and Juan, we had great managers who brought in the right kind of people, and Rian Skinner's kept that same kind of mentality of it's about the people as much as their playing skills. So I think we've done it in the right way. I don't think the club has obviously invested more now, and there has been a change. But I think that was kind of a natural progression from where we were at the time. We got promoted to the WSL probably a season earlier than the club were expecting. So all of a sudden they had to, you know, suddenly think about things. And that did mean certain things like the ground we played at and things were a bit of a last minute decision. And that had bearings on some of the issues that we were having at that time in terms of the facilities that were available for training and things. I think Alex Morgan coming in had a big impact. I think actually within the club as much as anything else, because all of a sudden the staff on the men's team and the players on the men's team had somebody who they knew who it was. And Jose Mourinho would be seen talking to Alex Morgan and things like that. So I think that had a big impact within the club as much as externally, which really helped us. But I do genuinely think the club, if they do anything, they want to do it properly, much in the same way Emma Hayes has always kind of said, we're Chelsea. this is what we do. I think Spurs have that same outlook of if we're going to do something, we're going to do it properly. And that is what they're doing. We haven't got the big bucks to spend, but I don't necessarily want to do a Manchester United or a Manchester City and just kind of buy our way anywhere.
Yeah, and kind of like with Emma Hayes, I think having Rhian Skinner come into the club has been a really big turning point, because she's been really firm about creating the right culture within, you know, the roster, within the club as a whole. And I think just her tactical ideas have kind of brought us up to another level, especially defensively. You know, I think that's one area where we've particularly seen a lot of improvement, and we're just now starting to get the attacking pieces coming together. But I agree with Sean that I think it's a point of pride for us that the team has sort of come up in the right way and, you know, on their own merit. And there is, though, the question of could there be more investment at this juncture? I think it has been sort of the conversation coming up earlier this season.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's like we put out all this news, we being the club, not like N17 women, about like, oh, like Spurs are really going to invest this summer. Like, there's actually money to be spent on a striker. Like, we might be paying people fees to get their attackers and stuff like that. And I think at the time it was kind of hard to know what that meant and whether it meant we were going to do like Manchester United like things and suddenly just build a Champions League level team in one summer out of nowhere. But we didn't really do that. We did kind of just keep going along in the same progression, and it's been kind of hard to know what to make of that. But I think, to Caroline's point, in my mind, as long as we like keep Rhian Skinner happy, I think we're in good shape, and I want us to invest what she wants to invest in, because I think we all really like trust in her as a manager and trust in her ideas. So that's kind of where I'm at.
I think I just wanted to say, I mean, Ashan's a much more long time Spurs supporter than I am, and she's been going to the games when they were in the lower leagues, which I didn't. And so she got to see that whole like coming up through the leagues, and, you know, I, you know, bow to her understanding in that sense. But I still think the club, there was a long period where the club didn't proactively invest in women's football. They, you know, they took over, you know, there was a team that was local that they badged and then they supported. But, you know, we had decades when there wasn't much going on as compared to the resources that Arsenal specifically were putting in. And that isn't a good thing. It's not something, a point of pride. It might be a point of pride that we didn't jump leagues and the team itself got promoted in the right way. And I think that's great. And that the team is now doing things the right way. But I don't think we should suddenly think that the club as a club is necessarily always been on the right side of history. It hasn't. And I'm, I guess, more happy to say that than I think, I don't know. Yeah, so I think that it's good now. And as the others have said, their money is going in, especially around training, and people are constantly talking about that side of where Spurs' investment is. But we also see that there are places where more could be done. Yeah, so we're definitely in that transition period, I guess.
Yeah, and you can even see it as much as like our players, a lot of our players came out of Chelsea and Arsenal's academy. Like, I feel like it's almost all of them. It's like you look at any of our players' past and it's like it's got a Chelsea or an Arsenal on there. So you can really see where that gap in history is coming through even still.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I appreciate the candor and honesty about that. You know, we do consider ourselves pretty fortunate. It seems like, you know, I do not know if Chelsea would have done this without the prodding of Emma Hayes. I think she's been the central figure to what Chelsea has done. But it does seem like now, you know, Spurs are on the ascendancy. You know, they're investing in the team. The team's playing very well. You're adding players, you know, throughout the summer, making some signings. I'm kind of wondering, what are some next steps that you're looking for from the team, both in terms of like short term, maybe like a particular type of signing that you want to see them be in competition for or to secure, but of course then also long term?
I think if we can sort out our injuries, that would be a first goal for us all. Yeah. We do have a big problem this season with that. I think also short term wise, we still need to look at our attacking options. We've got Nicola, but she's the only kind of out and out striker that we've got, and there's no backup to that. So when she's not playing, as she is having some injury issues early on in the season, that kind of phases our plan and we're not quite sure where to go from there. So I think at the moment, short term, we just need to understand the squad that we've got and how they fit together. We're still kind of coming together as a new squad. And I think it started, obviously, against Brighton, it started to click. But we've got to see that consistently. Long term, obviously, well, the talk, even not long term, whenever you listen to the players and Rianne talk, the goal is Champions League and to be playing Champions League. I think that's likely to be not something that's going to be this season and possibly not even the season after. But I think within a few seasons, we'd be hoping to be at least being more competitive in hunting down those Champions League places. So those are kind of, I think, where we're at.
And speaking of that Brighton game you mentioned, I mean, we have to talk about that because me and Andre mentioned it briefly last week and we were both like, we've got to go watch that and see what happened because it was crazy. 8-0, which, to be honest, like those kinds of scorelines are becoming a bit more familiar in the WSL, but still eight goals. You know, so bad that the manager decided that she couldn't manage the team after that. That's probably not like the way it's going to be framed in the media, but it was a very powerful performance from Spurs. And although there was quite a lot of issues in the Brighton defence that allowed those goals to happen, Spurs were just absolutely rampant. So I kind of want to know what your thoughts were on that game. Is it just like a standalone game where, you know, Brighton were just bad and you managed to score loads of goals? Or do you feel like this is something that's been coming because it's a combination of everything that's happening in the team, the club?
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up sort of the media framing of it, because I know that's something we've all been kind of a little annoyed with, you know, that it's been framed more as Brighton were terrible rather than Spurs getting a whole lot of credit, you know, for their part in the performance. But to me, it was a really encouraging game because we scored a variety of goals. So we saw some goals from set pieces, some from open play, you know, some from just straight up pressing the opposition's keeper, you know, different kinds of ways of attacking. And I think that's something that we haven't always seen from our attack. So that was sort of my main takeaway from it. And it's a bummer that we didn't get to play this past weekend and build on that. So having Chelsea being the first test after that game is going to be a really interesting one, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting game for us because, as you know, Spurs last season did not score a lot of goals. And since we've been in the WSL, we've never scored more than 4 in one game. This was a third of the total goals that we scored in across the whole of last season. And previously this season, we'd scored 3. That said, we have played really well in some first halves. So one of the things that we were most impressed about at Brighton was not just the 4 goals in the first half, but then there was another 4 in the second half. And previously this season, in games against Leicester and Reading and Liverpool, we've had really good first halves where we've come away thinking, oh, you know, we scored only maybe 1 or 2, but we thought we could have scored a lot more and we were very dominant. And then we've had second halves where we've just, yeah, it's not been great. So this was the first game where we saw that continue. And so that was one of the things I think we're really excited about. And as Caroline says as well, we've had the kinds of goals we've scored this season have all been quite flamboyant, but that's partly because we haven't scored enough goals in the box. So it was nice to see us scoring some messy goals as well as those sort of beautiful Ash Neville from 40 yards out goals, which has been what we'd relied on up to that point.
Yeah, and I think like there was a clear pattern of improvement that we saw from the start of the season, because last year we were really defensively solid and at the start of the season we weren't so much. And part of that I've always thought was because we get a lot of defensive work from our midfielders and forwards and less than you would expect from like our center backs. And I think we were like bedding in a lot of new players who needed to learn the pressing patterns and get up to full fitness. And so you sort of saw this progression from the start of the season where we were letting in silly goals and making a lot of silly mistakes. And we kind of saw a tighter defensive performance against City before we played Brighton, but that attacking piece was still missing. It looked like no one was trying to shoot. No one was trying to get into the box at all, which is like a running bit we have is what do we need to do? We need to get into the box. And there weren't even really people trying to make attacks in that game. And so it was really heartening to see against Brighton from the very first minute, we were trying to do all those things and build on this like somewhat more organized defensive performance that we had against City. And it also so happened that Brighton were terrible in that game. But we've played terrible opposition before and not put eight past them. It's like, it, to me, that game showed exactly what I wanted to see building off of such a poor attacking performance against City. And it really showed us like being faster, taking our opportunities, like not even just taking them, but actually trying to create opportunities. So yeah, it was a very flattering scoreline, but I think it was still a really, really positive and heartening performance against us that speaks to more than just Brighton rolling over.
I wanted to get one question in before we talk about Ash Neville a bit, because I think we both have a couple questions about Ash Neville for a number of reasons. But y'all kind of talked about it a little bit in your answers here. But I'm just wondering, tactically, what has been like the most interesting thing to you about Spurs this season? Maybe that was different from last season.
I think it's Nikola Kolarov. So, who is the point of our attack when she's fit. And she actually played in the game pre-season that we played against Chelsea, and she was pretty effective, although she only played, I think, half a game. She is, I don't know, people describe her as like the Harry Kane of the women's team, but she's big, she's strong, she's a focal point, she can hold the ball up and bring other players in, and she also just distracts defenders' attention, which creates other space. And I think that has allowed us to also, I think the other thing alongside that is bringing Ash Neville up. So having Ash as sort of on one side, having Nicola in the middle in the centre, and then playing with brain gone. Completely dead. Who's on the other side now?
Celine,
of course. So Celine's new. But yeah, so we've got much faster, more sort of attacking wingers, I guess. Yeah. So it's created, I think, much more of a focus.
Yeah, I think the other thing to note is we've been playing with a back four a lot this season, which is last season we were kind of switching back and forth, and we would play back four against weaker sides and a back five against stronger sides. Now this year, I think a lot of it could be down to we've played a back five when our midfielders have been injured, and we've played a back four when our defenders have been injured. So a little bit of it has been influenced more by injury, but I think we've seen some tactical shifts around us switching to a back four this year, us coming into a midfield pairing that's like different from the midfield pairing we had last year. Throughout this season so far, we've seen Drew Spence played in like every single one of the positions, like 6, 8, 10, all of the central positions. Same with Evelina Suminen, who you really want her like running around and not playing as a false nine. So yeah, we've seen some like interesting like injury cover-ups, and then yeah, the introduction of the back four. But otherwise, a lot of it looks pretty similar to last year, I would say, in terms of like our pressing. And yeah, it remains to be seen whether we have introduced more attacking tactics that we didn't have last year, like more sort of like patterns or what have you. But, you know, there's only been sort of one game so far where we've been really doing those. So we still have to wait and see.
Yeah, I also think it's notable that, you know, last season we saw Ash Neville being used in kind of a variety of positions. And for the most part this year, she's been, you know, firmly up there in the attack. So I think that that's really where Rianne prefers to employ her, injuries allowing, of course.
And talking of Ash Neville, I mean, we've talked about her sort of her tactical abilities in her positional interchangeability. But really and truly, what more does she have to do to be included in the England side? Because it really does seem she's pulling out all the stops, you know, her defending and more importantly, her goal scoring contributions and, you know, her ability to pass the ball out and to play in various formations. I think I can vaguely remember Serena Weigman talking about it more so that they're kind of content with what they have in the squad. But it boggles the mind because you think a player who's playing this good must at least get some inclusion, you know.
Yeah, don't get us started on that one. We'll be here forever. we've had this conversation ourselves, and yeah, I mean, what does Ash have to do? I mean, she's come into the league a few seasons ago and straight away been one of the best fullbacks in the league, in interceptions and all those kind of key statistics. She's always up towards the top. She's come in last season and started to play more attackingly and done well there. This season she's playing out of her skin. We're seeing some fabulous goals. We're seeing some great assists. Just really incredible. I think the only thing that goes against her, as far as I can see, is that she hasn't been through the England pathways when she was younger. And to me, that's a kind of a discriminatory thing not to use her, because we talk about the pathways and we talk about the problems with the pathways, and it seems to me that you shouldn't just be denying somebody a place in the England squad simply because they didn't have the opportunity when they were 16, 17, 18. You know, if a player is playing well, they're playing well. You look at the men's squad, and James Maddison's now been included in England for the men's team. It seems to me exactly the same thing. Ash Neville is playing out of her skin in for her club, and everybody's talking about it now. It's not just Spurs fans now saying she should be playing for England. It's everybody. So whilst I don't have much hope that she's going to, because I don't think Serena Wiegmann sees her as an England player, I don't understand it, and I never will.
Yeah, I think in terms of, like, what does she need to do, it's like she needs to drink a magic potion to make herself 5 years younger, or, like, not play for Tottenham. And I don't think either of those things are going to happen. Like, they're not seeming likely. So, yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of a shame because I think we all sort of feel like this was the time when she needed to get her window into the team and have that chance to prove herself in the training camp. And, you know, because the World Cup's going to be here before we know it, and that opportunity is just going to be gone because Serena's not going to want to bring her in, you know, last minute, and not know how she's going to gel with everyone else. So it's disappointing.
Yeah. And I've heard people talk about age and that she's too old, and Serena keeps on saying, I'm going to bring in young people. But of course, these are people who are then not very likely to necessarily start. I mean, with a few exceptions, players who are young and are playing really well. But it's also just ridiculous because if we think about age in terms of footballing life, a lot of Ash's footballing career, she was part-time. She was playing a couple of days a week because she was not in the WSL. And so if you think about that sort of footballing life, she's actually much younger than her numeric age, and you compare her to other players. So again, it's just a very short-sighted way of thinking about a player who, as Sian said earlier, has gone up through the leagues, and each time she's gone up has adjusted and worked out how to play at a new standard, risen to expectations. And that's kind of what you want in an international player. So yeah, we don't understand. I mean, we've heard the arguments of why she isn't there. I'm sure they make sense to people who watch her as well. She is the sort of player who, when you take people to a game, they'll say, like, oh, who's that? I know people who went to the Emirates who were Arsenal fans, and they would be saying, who was your number 29? She was really good. And we were terrible that game. Like, everyone in Spurs was, okay, not everyone, but she stood out because she was the player who wasn't terrible. And she is, in every single one of our games this season, she has been our best player. And you know, there aren't players who consistently are the team's best player. It's really rare. So, yeah. As you can tell, we've got strong feelings.
Yes, we do. And especially when, like, Rachel Daly is still being called up as a defender, you could call her up as a striker and call up Ash Neville. That would be fine. It would. It would work.
I was just about to suggest that. I don't know. I mean, of course, being here watching the NWSL, you know, in our brains, Rachel Daly is a striker. She's a forward. So I don't necessarily know why you wouldn't just go ahead and make that switch. It seems pretty obvious to me, especially with Ellen White being out of the international team picture now. You are going to need backup for Russo, and I think Daly would be perfect for that.
So I kind of want to ask you guys a question specifically about the game this weekend, because we've talked a lot about, like, tactical, you know, plans and individual players, but as a whole, how do you suspect Spurs are going to approach this game? Like, what is the game plan? Knowing the history of Chelsea, the head-to-head clashes, specifically that Chelsea are looking to win all their games. I mean, obviously, they've got to win all their games, but knowing that Arsenal, who are challenging them, are winning all their games and United have done fairly well bar the defeat, what is the game plan here?
Well, I worry that the game plan is what it often is again, and what we did against Arsenal, which is sit back in our half for the first half and wait for the second half to really make our attack and hope that we're still in it. We didn't do that more recently, and it's worked out better for us. And we didn't do that against City, to be fair. So hopefully we've stopped doing that and we are going to take the game to Chelsea, because I think that's when we play at our best, is when we're actually taking the game to somebody else, you know, believing in ourselves and running at players for the whole game. And as I say, hope we did that against City, so hopefully we will against Chelsea.
Yeah, I think we've often talked about how our ability to attack effectively is kind of determined by whether Nikola Karczewska is playing or not, because she sort of is just the crux of the whole press. So hopefully she is able to start, because we know she dropped out of the Poland national team for this international cycle. Hopefully it's just something precautionary, but if she was not able to start, I think that would really limit our ability to, you know, take the game to Chelsea, like Sean said. But that's definitely what I'm hoping to see. And I'm hoping that we're still carrying some of that confidence from the Brighton game, even though we had the postponed match in between.
Yeah, it's really tough to say, like, without the Everton game having gone ahead, because we'd love to think that it is going to be the Spurs side that comes right out of the gate and tries to attack. But again, yeah, a ton of that is dependent on Nikola, and we don't know what her fitness is like. We heard rumors that there were additional injuries after Brighton. So we're kind of just like waiting to see and hoping that there aren't any massive surprises on match day.
Yeah, I mean, as Abby just said there, and as we've sort of hinted at throughout our responses, Spurs, this start of this season has been very injury hit. So we've had benches in most of our games of just 5 or 6 players, including the goalkeeper. So against Brighton, we were up to a 7-person bench and we were really excited that it looked like we started to have options. But if we just have 1 or 2 more players injured, then obviously that really radically decreases our options. And especially if it's someone like Nikola who does something different. Now, she hasn't typically played an entire game, but you know, in an ideal world, what she does is she is really difficult in the first half and provides enough problems that it kind of creates options. And we've had Jess coming in the second half, and her pace in the second half is often really good then to sort of wear people down. And that was what happened against Brighton. And I'd like to see that. That's my optimistic side. My more pessimistic side is that, well, no, the worst case scenario is, as Sean says, we just sit back. But in a kind of like half optimistic version is we play really aggressively for the first half and we maybe go get a goal, and then it doesn't, we don't have the players to continue. And I think that's what we saw in the 2 games against Chelsea last season, is in both cases we were actually doing okay in the first half, and then Emma Hayes made substitutions and was able to change tactically, and Rianne basically had a few players on the bench who weren't even at the standard of the players, you know, on the pitch. And so let alone sort of making tactical changes, she couldn't even maintain the pace of the game. And I think that's where our worries are, especially playing a team like Chelsea that has such an amazing squad.
Yeah, and just to cap that off, so I'm going to assume everybody is fit, like just for a minute. I think ideally what we see is that strong pressing from the like leading off trio of, it'll be Nikola up top and hopefully Ash and Salim Bizet on the wings and Drew Spence in sort of a 10-ish role. And hopefully seeing them like in our two midfielders creating those turnovers and playing the quick combinations, using options, like creating options for ball progression all over the fields. That's what we'd like to see. That's what Spurs, we think, look like in their ideal, is pressing a lot up top and having the center backs and fullbacks just be sort of like there to sweep things up and get things moving again. It is hard to say what we'll see, because in big games like against Chelsea, Arsenal, United, et cetera, we do tend to sit back and not do those things that, like, to us make Spurs Spurs. So jury's out. We'll see.
So we do have a final question before we go on to predictions. We kind of wanted to talk about more about what was happening on the pitch, and maybe so in a sense areas that you feel Spurs are still kind of lacking in, or if there's a way in which you feel you might sort of be able to be accessed more easily, whether that's the midfield or the defence, because obviously we've seen quite a lot of good of attacking football. But as you mentioned, cast your minds back to that spur that. North London derby against Arsenal, and that was maybe, you know, and maybe more in a less sort of sense against Man City, moments and reasons to think that it might not all be sort of good.
I think our the two major weaknesses that come to mind is that on teams like that have really strong players like Chelsea, like Arsenal, like City, most of their players can beat our players one-on-one. So it doesn't even matter what we do tactically, because it's like we start pressing and you just beat them, and that's that. You've played through the press. So I think that's a big one. And then I think the other big weakness we have is if you try to isolate our center backs, teams with good attackers like will be able to create stuff past our center backs. And how could I possibly forget? We are awful at defending set pieces. I can't believe I didn't lead with that. We have even just like put the ball straight in our own net on set pieces. Not many of our players are good in the air. And so if you put balls in from a corner on our goal, we will kind of just stand there and watch you. That's gonna be if Chelsea wins a corner, there's absolutely no way that we're keeping a clean sheet.
So that's quite insightful. I mean, I thought you were gonna say something like really neat and tactical, but you're just like, no, put the ball in there and maybe it'll go in, maybe it won't, who knows. Yeah, I guess that might be all of our questions. I mean, you guys asked for our predictions, put us on the spot. So I'm going to ask each of you for specific goal times, specific scorers, specific times in which it happens during the game. Otherwise, you incur the wrath of the prediction gods. This is just how we do it on the Fan Kirby Fight Club. Andre knows, he hates me. He's happy he can't speak right now. what are you guys' thoughts on scorelines for this weekend?
Well, we had a chat with Keris Harrop earlier on in the week, and she went for 1-1. So I think we've got to go with Keris and say, you know, we're going to get our first points off Chelsea in the league. You know, I think which way round do I think it will be? I think we'll get a sneaky early one, and then you'll get one a bit later on. How about that? And if we're saying scorers, Ashley Neville is going to be, because she's the one that does that sort of thing.
Yeah, I have my hopeful prediction is that I would be pretty happy with a 1-1 draw. And I too think that Ash Neville will be getting our goal, because she's just on such a hot streak right now, and it kind of feels like you can't stop her. But it'll probably be Sam Kerr scoring against us, because she kind of iced both games last season, if I recall correctly. So I think our goal probably would come in the first half and hers in the second.
I feel like I agree with Caroline and Sean that we're most likely to score in the first half. I'm hoping Nicola's playing, and I can see a messy Nicola goal, like Nicola getting it in the box somehow in the 23rd minute is... Yeah, that's where I see our goal coming from. I'm not sure that we're going to score again. And a lot of whether we're able to sustain it and get to a draw, which I think is probably my most optimistic prediction, is going to depend on how deep our bench is. So if we have more injuries, I think it might be one of those another 3-1 like it was last season. But if we have a deeper bench, then I'm going to be optimistic and say 1-1. And yeah, I think Chelsea will score. I mean, Lauren James, she's going to score, isn't she? In the, I don't know, 57th minute.
I love it. Okay, here's mine. I think that we're going to get an absolutely undeserved 2-2 draw. I think we're going to score early. And I think it's going to be Drew Spence against her old club. I think a silly mistake or individual talent on our part is going to lead Lauren James to equalize shortly before halftime. I think we're going to, like, people are going to be tweeting that it should be 4-1 Chelsea at halftime, but it's not going to be. It's going to be 1-1 at halftime. And then second half, I think Chelsea are going to go up 2-1, and that's going to be scored by, like, who's, like, a random Chelsea player who never scores? I don't know. One of those, though. It'll be great. But we're going to ultimately win thanks to I actually don't think it's going to be Ash Neville. I'm feeling a sort of like hand of Roz situation where we like get a really sketchy call and like, I don't know, maybe like a last minute penalty or something. And it ends 2-2. And like, we are totally miserable with how we played, but happy because we got the point.
Can I just say, by the way, like, I always ask Andre to give me specific predictions and he always never does it. And you guys have just so beautifully, each one of you created the perfect narrative in depth of what exactly is going to happen.
I feel like I'm going to take this. I feel like I'm going to start asking this on the pod. I love asking score predictions. This is I'm going to say we got the idea from you, but it's great. It's so much fun.
You see, I do this to Andre every week and he hates it, but I enjoy it. And that's just like, that's the most important thing, obviously. It's fun to do it to other people. But also, I think you get a very good idea of like how you were feeling towards a certain game and how that changes in the next podcast when you review it. So that's always been interesting for us. I do think that is all of our questions. We've had a lot to talk about today, obviously. A lot of stuff about tactics and individual teams, but I do feel like we've all come to a natural conclusion. Unless you guys have any more, anything else to say or any more questions or anything you'd like to say to promote your own podcast to the people who listen on separate podcasts?
No, just thanks for having us on. It was really fun to do this crossover with y'all.
It's our first one. So, you know, it was just exciting for us, but definitely I think this has been really interesting to do and always interesting to get the other side, the perspective, which we don't always get when it's just me and Andre doing the talking. And I think that is it for this episode of the Fran Kirby Fight Club. Thank you guys for listening. As we've said, we've had a wonderful time doing this joint podcast. And if you're not already following or looking at the N17 Women, they do have a Twitter account. I believe they upload podcasts to
all your platforms of choice.
Spotify, you can find Apple, Google, the works. Perfect. And just the same for us over at the Fran Kirby Fight Club. Do continue to listen and tune in. I believe Andre will have this podcast edited as soon as he's able to be back online. He's currently messaging in the chat because his internet's gone a bit haywire. But apart from that, as we say, do keep tuning in and listening, and hopefully we will catch you on the flip side. I was going to say catch you on the flippity flip, which is an office reference, but nobody will understand that.